play action. Back to throw. McNair with time. Now is being hit. Running around, trying to get outside. Looking for a block. Being chased by Spicer. He falls down. Spicer covers him up.
And he'll get the sack.
Bledsoe barks out the signals. Takes the snap. Rolls back. Under some pressure. Is about to get hit. It's sacked. Paul Spicer got him at the 15. And the clock will run.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and John Osher.
The Ozone is back and we're ready for a boisterous edition of Jaguars Today. Players have the day off, Ozone, but we
do
are
not.
Always on the grind.
We do not.
And 7 days a week.
And boy, what a first 4 or 5 days. I mean, I was talking to somebody on the field last night, you know, there's an energy in the community, right? I think everybody can feel around the Jaguars that they get that it's going in the right direction. They haven't even been on the field yet in uniform, and they've had two events that have really sort of helped capture that. And I think that, you know, I work with these people, so I see how hard they work at it, but it is worth noting that not every team does what they've done in the last 4 or 5 days for the fans, for making it friendly, for, you know, for making this exciting. So a credit to them. It's easy to see on the field the energy sort of going forward, but it's not always easy to capture that and make the fans feel a part of it. So it's been neat to see the last week.
I was appreciative of J.P. Shadrick calling each period.
Yeah.
Right? And because I could use that at a regular practice. You know, now
there's
I know
so
what I'm looking at.
There's so much to be thankful for when it comes to J.P.
There really is.
He
is
really one of them.
That continues to give on a daily basis to all of us here. Last night, once again, Allen Robinson making his presence known or accounted for. You know, he continues to, I think, make plays down the field, which is probably the most eye-opening thing to me. Him coming in, you look at his body type. I didn't watch a bunch of Penn State football.
Right.
Thinking more of a move the chains kind of guy. I think this guy's got more explosive ability than we realized.
Well, you know, you watch enough training camps and you see many, many guys at different levels. Either they're free agents or they're first-round picks. But you see guys come in and they're just behind. They can't keep up when they first come in. And it's notable, I think, to watch Allen Robinson and to only a very slightly less degree Marquise Lee. I'm not even sure it's a less degree. These guys do not look lost. These guys look like they're getting it. They're keeping up. They're making plays. They've each had a couple of drops, but they've also each had plays and they're each consistently open, which is critical because you have to be open to catch the ball, but they're getting open, which tells me that they're translating what Jerry Sullivan's telling them and they're getting it and they have that ability. There's still a long way to go. I'm not saying these are 1,000-yard guys this season, but they're showing the thing. Remember Justin Blackman 2 years ago? Immediately when you saw him on the field, you knew that he had the talent and the ability to play in this league.
Yeah.
I don't know that these guys showed that hands element that Justin did. Justin's hands are out of this world, but they're showing other things. They're showing the route running, and they look like they belong, and they look like certainly it is an achievable path to being go-to guys in the future.
Yeah, Robinson, like you said, he doesn't have impeccable, not the, you know, it's not that he'll never drop a pass, but
right.
I think he's just as likely to catch a ball in tight coverage
mm-hmm.
as he is when he's open. Now, he has that ability to be getting hit, take that contact. Whereas Marquise Lee now, you see as soon as he gets the ball in his hands,
yeah.
that first step, he's sizing up that defender,
mm-hmm.
and he's generally setting him up. And it's fun to envision what that's going to be
yeah.
like. Some of those stop-and-go kind of deals and some of those quick comeback routes
right.
that they are throwing on the sidelines where he can run the defender off, turn around, catch the ball, square him up,
yeah.
and then that defender's kind of on his heels. He's really,
and he's got this little move where he's sort of, as you said, he has the quick step to get away from the defender, and then he sort of leans down and sort of angles his way toward the sidelines to where he gets a spot. I guess with both of them, in the first 4 days, you can easily see that they've got a skill set, maybe one or two skills that are going to translate, right now, and you can see why they were drafted. In doing this a long time, there are many rookies you see early who you look at them and go, well, we'll see. But these guys are showing something. And again, I want to temper it because it doesn't necessarily translate to week five against the absolute best corner into a 100-yard game. But it does translate into them having skills that can be taken advantage of and they can be put into the offense right now, which isn't always the case for a young player.
We talked yesterday with Ryan O'Halloran a little bit about Marcel Jensen, how he had not, to my eye, really stepped forward quite as much as he had in OTAs in the first few days of camp, whereas Clay Harbor was getting a lot of balls thrown his way and really looked like he was going to be a big part of the offense. Now, he strains his calf last night. Looked like it could have been worse the way they were helping him off the field, but he'll be out for at least a few days. This is an opportunity now for Jensen on a tight end depth chart that doesn't go much beyond Mercedes and Clay Harbor.
Well, and the big thing with him during OTAs, and Gus said it from the time we started talking to him about Marcel Jensen, he would get that big Gus smile and say, yes, but we got to see him block. So that's still going to be the thing. So far in shoulder pads, from talking to Jeff Logan on the field the other day, we were watching, and he goes, he's not quite there as a blocker yet, but he certainly has the size to do it. He certainly has the capability of doing it. He didn't do it a lot in college, so it's still got to translate. You haven't really seen him do the receiving things down the field, as you mentioned, but he has the talent. He has the skills that we've seen that. So it's hard to imagine that won't translate into pads. It's the blocking that still has to translate.
Right, which is what Gus said basically all summer. We got to wait till we get the pads.
And credit Gus, because they knew that this was the question mark. They had not seen him do this on tape. It's the thing he's got to learn. And I wouldn't really expect that to be great the first day in pads of a guy that they know has to learn that. It's got to be a process. He has to show willingness, and that's what's coming up next.
Well, we know that Robinson and Lee are going to have their big roles on offense. We know Mercedes is a starter at tight end. Really, the one offensive position we're looking at as a battle is the right guard position, right? Brandon Leonard, Jock McClendon. Mm-hmm. Are they kind of alternating days where they get more run with the first team right now?
Well, so far, but we're only 4 days in. So when Gus said last night, yeah, they're alternating. Linder got a lot of work last night with the ones. It would still be surprising if you're looking at the graph over the course of training camp. It would still be surprising if the graph, generally speaking, isn't up on Linder in terms of number of times with the ones.
Reps,
I mean, that's going to be how it goes. Yes, it's been alternating so far. It just seems like something that's going to happen, and at some point in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be happening consistently.
Do you know what's happening at the stadium, like, right now, this very minute?
You and me are talking some football, baby.
Yes. You know what else is happening? Fat Tony's here enjoying our company. He's going to weigh in here as well. In addition
no
to all
today,
that, well, that's the thing. Right? We got Agent Gibb producing the show. Lauren, Donna, Jessica Blaylock, and Blythe from Boyd Magazine, I believe, are makeup the Helmets and Heels crew, right, which is going to debut. You're not happy with this?
Well, see, I'm down on it because I'm about consistency, Mike. Every day you got to be there.
And you have an
Lauren's
issue
with
what?
Lauren's not here.
Not here producing.
Right.
Because she's
right
here at the stadium right now.
Yes, yeah.
It's publicity.
Fine.
Okay.
We'll agree to disagree.
She's here. They're doing their promotional shoot.
I guess the question is why
Helmets and Heels.
I was going to say, Jaguars Today launched 2.5 months ago. We didn't have a promotional photo shoot.
And why not?
Take a peek, okay?
And why not Fat Tony?
You're looking right at me, and you have to ask why this is. Fat Tony last night, I know I caught some of the Fat Tony show.
Oh.
Well, as I got in the car, driving through the nether regions of St. Johns County, and I know you're a big follower of Twitter.
Yeah.
And what's happening. What was the buzz like? Just on the whether it was reporting or Jag fans weighing in on what the experience was like last night.
Well, the buzz as far as what people were talking about on Twitter last night, a lot of people were concerned. I joked around about it, but Mike Brewster apparently got blown up in a couple one-on-one drills, and people were very concerned about that. And I was like, relax, guys. I mean, seriously, it's day four of training camp. It doesn't really mean anything at this point. Let's just relax with Mike Brewster getting blown up in a couple one-on-one drills. But really,
who's he getting blown? The question is he getting blown up by Red Bryant? I would hope he probably.
I think
is.
It was Red once, and it might have been Alu-Alu once that I saw on there.
He just wants to fight somebody.
Sure. Apparently, Todman had another great night last night.
Todman's looked pretty good.
He's had a pretty good couple days there in practice. But
Cobb looked pretty good last night.
A lot
too,
of talk about the Clay Harbor injury. And people were reacting to that. And a lot of, you know, people were excited to have the opportunity to be out there. I heard from a couple people that I talked to that got out for that practice last night, I was like, well, do you ever come down for training camp? No, it's the first time I've ever been to a Jaguar practice because it was in St. Johns County and it was closer to home. It was more convenient for me. So I think from a Jaguar perspective, from a Jaguar perspective, what they did last night worked. And I'm curious to see what they want to do with it in the future as far as, you know, maybe they take a practice up to South Georgia. Maybe they go to Daytona or something like that for one training camp practice.
South Georgia is not as convenient for me. I'm just throwing it out there.
But maybe they do that kind of thing. And I know Dave Caldwell, his last year in Atlanta, they did something similar to this. So he's comfortable with the idea. And as well as it worked for them last night, you would think that it's something they're certainly going to think about going into the future.
And Bartram Trail, I'm sure, you know, the Jags organization had a lot to do with the setup. But Bartram Trail and everybody, I thought it was very well run. You know,
it's a beautiful play. Yeah.
And considering how many people. Now, here's what I'm curious. Attendance last night. 3329. Did 829 people rush the door? What happened? I thought it was capped at 2,500 people. What happened?
I was doing Jags.com Live, and then it was about 10 minutes after I went off the air, I heard that number, and I had this vision of people with pitchforks at the gate storming in and just overriding the last 2,500.
Yeah, or were like six people hiding in everyone's trunk, or I don't know how that happened last
they
night.
They must get in.
They did get in last night. It was a good time had by all. Today, coming up on the program, we're going to speak with Jed Fish, Jaguar offensive coordinator. He's coming up in about an hour and 20 minutes, right around 11:30. So in the second hour of the program, we'll talk with him. Tony and I got a chance to catch up with Luke Jokel. You don't hear from Luke Jokel all that much. A guy who may be the franchise cornerstone, not named Blake Bortles, on this team, or maybe If you hope for the success of this team, he turns out to be that, certainly. At the age of 22, we'll talk about his place with this Jaguar talent base, what they have growing here. And our question of the day is in line with that, in line with an ESPN story that featured the top 25 players in the National Football League under the age of 25. So we simply ask you today, which Jaguar player under the age of 25 will have the biggest impact on the team? Who will be their best player under the age of 25 in 2014? You can weigh in a variety of ways. Tweet me at MD_1010XL. Tweet John Osier. Tweet 1010XL Fat Tony. Tweet at 1010XL Lauren. All those will work. You can go to Facebook.com/Jaguars today and post in the thread there as well. So we got a lot coming up for you today, including Jed Fish and Luke Jokel. The Ozone's here. Fat Tony's here. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today, live from Everbank Field on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. Fortunato's lurking in the background as well. Agent Gibbs back at 1010XL. World headquarters, Lauren popped in this morning. Lauren's getting all dolled up.
She was.
She's having that hair done up. holy cow. It was crazy. Maybe she'll stop by after her photo shoot. John's got his photo shoot coming up. He and JP for Jaguars.com Live. I'm going to do a nice photo shoot later on today. Like the ladies, I think they're going to use the pool as a prop, if I'm not mistaken.
I thought it was going to be the heels.
I want to get Fat Tony involved, Mike.
Pool,
I
mean, pool heels?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you want a looker out of the crowd, that's probably
you're going to bring it.
That's probably the
direction
you go. I want
to see some photo ops for the Fat Tony Show on Monday night.
There we go.
Fantastic. The Tom Bush Family Dealership's question of the day, who will be the Jags' best player under the age of 25 this year? Number of candidates to choose from. We'll roll through some of them later. Already getting a lot of response on Twitter and on the Facebook page. No surprise that that ESPN in their list of the top 25 under 25 listed Andrew Luck as the top player. So you're going to have to deal with him for quite a long time. He turns 25 on September 12th. So the criteria for this was several things. They had to be under 25 as of week one of the 2013 season. Rookies don't count, so whatever you think of Jadeveon Clowney, he's not considered in there. Rankings are based on these criteria. Overall talent, total production, and likelihood of future production. See, meaning health concerns and off-field issues matter when they factor in likelihood of future production. You take a guy like Luke Jokel,
right?
Who's only 22 years old.
Right.
I mean, really is a young guy. And overall talent, I think you can argue, you hope it's extremely high. I don't think he disproved his draft slot last year.
No.
You know, total production, well, pretty low right now because he only played, you know, parts
four
of
games
five
and
games.
A quarter.
Right.
Sure.
And the likelihood of future production, I don't consider, you know, Luke Jokel to be an injury-prone guy. It's not like he blew out his knee, and you have to worry about, is that going to be something that lingers on into this year? But I don't know how you calculate the likelihood of future production for an offensive tackle.
Well, and you're 4-12 last year.
Correct.
And there's been a lot of positive publicity about this team, but it's still not a team that people look at it and automatically say, okay, we've got to find two guys on this list, or it's not a legitimate list. It's still a team that's not going to be in that category until they start winning some more. I think you can put Jokel on that list. I think by the end of this season, you'll see Cyprian on that list, and maybe a couple other guys, because there are some good young players on this team. But your point to Jokel is exactly correct. He played four games last year. It's also easy to overlook offensive linemen on a list like this because you want impact guy. As a writer who's written these things, it's easier to write stats than it is to say this guy projects as a left tackle X and Y and Z.
Very hard to do, and I think it's very hard to say, you know, unless you really – and I make that admission all the time. I'm not qualified to tell you. That's why I rely on guys who played in the league. Obviously, a guy like Tony Boselli, who's played the position, or a guy like Jeff Logman, who's played against elite left tackles, and they can tell you, you know, what they're looking for, and they can show you and maybe teach you a little bit how to learn, but how – one left tackle is going to be 3 years from now compared to the other guy.
Right.
I think is a guessing game for most writers.
Everything you hear from Boselli, and he's the guy that I listen to in terms of offensive line, especially this position, when you saw Tony play as a kid, you could tell he was put on this earth to play the position. He had the leverage, he had the body, all that stuff. He believes that Jokel's got all of that and that he's not going to have a problem being a big-time left tackle. So, you know, I think in a year, Luke Jokel would be a guy who's on this list.
If he had no off-field problems, I think Justin Blackmon might already be on this list, right? I mean, because
No question.
They've got Josh Gordon marked down at number 21. And they said, you know, just on talent, he's in the top five.
Right.
But if you're talking about future production, it's very much up in the air whether he'll play at all this year.
Yep.
Most people expect he won't. So they knock him down. Who jumps to mind among young players? And sometimes it's hard to know, is this guy 25, is this guy 24?
Right.
But who are some of the young players in the league that you guys think would find a spot on the top 25, under 25?
Well, Luck obviously jumps up there. I mean, he's the guy. If I was making a list, he'd be number one as well. RG3 is the interesting guy because you don't really know right now where he's at, and you don't know what the future is going to bring. Is he the rookie or is he the second year guy? So, you know, I would definitely have to have Luck on the top.
First guy that jumps to mind for me is Robert Quinn.
Yep.
In St. Louis. With the year he had last year, I think he could potentially be the best pass rusher, pure pass rusher in the National Football League, and he's only going into his third year or whatever now. So he's got to be 23, 24 years old.
I don't know how close he is, but the linebacker from Carolina, Kuechly.
Kuechly, yeah.
Kuechly, I'm sorry.
That's right, Kuechly.
Kuechly,
Fran, and Kuechly. You guys had the top three. Andrew Luck, Robert Quinn, Luke Kuechly are the top three guys.
He may be as good a linebacker as come out in a long, long time.
And RG3 is 10th overall. Couple of years ago.
He's the best story on the list because you just don't know.
During the midst of his rookie season, he might have been number one, even ahead of Andrew Luck. I mean, he was certainly outplaying him until he got hurt during his rookie season. If you're wondering, Russell Wilson is 25 years old, so he doesn't qualify for this list because I was like, that's a little curious. Where would Russell Wilson be? Would he still be behind Andrew Luck? I mean, he certainly accomplished more. I think he probably would be as well.
Yes.
And because but it's all based on what you expect to come down the road, I think. Because, I mean, Luck has been good. I think Wilson's been better. And you don't?
No. No.
Wow. Go look at the TD to interception ratio.
I understand all that.
Russell Wilson.
He's also on a significantly better team.
Right. And I think he plays a large role in that as well.
Yes. But
look, I'm not saying that I would take Russell Wilson over Andrew Luck. I'm just talking about performance on the field. And yes, he has a very good team around him. But, you know, I'm not going to knock him for that.
No.
You know, and he's had the playoff success. You could argue maybe if they came up short and it was in some way on him that he didn't play well in the playoff games, he might be able to downgrade
him. We'll see how it plays out.
Oh, look, I'm going to take Luck, Mr. I'm going to take the favorite here and give you Russell Wilson. I see where he's trying to pigeonhole me. I just think Russell Wilson's been better.
You know how much I love
than Andrew Luck.
You know how much I love Russ. I mean, we talked about this last year. He's already my favorite player in the entire league. I mean, in his second year, he's my favorite player in the entire league. He's not as skilled as Andrew Luck, but you can't debate the success that he's had. I mean, Andrew Luck, I was listening to somebody that was doing a camp report on the Indianapolis Colts yesterday and talking about, well, they have all these weapons, but the offensive line stinks. And I'm like, yeah, and it has for 2 years. And without Reggie Wayne last year, with no running game last year, Andrew Luck elevated. Mm-hmm. I mean, completely elevated the Indianapolis Colts to in a bad division, granted, but got them to a point where they were running away with the South. Like, it was never in doubt. Once we were a month into the season, who's going to win the South? Indianapolis. There was no doubt about it. And as bad as everything was around Andrew on that side of the ball, for them to be as good as they were still, I mean, they beat Seattle and Denver last year. They're the only team that did that. The two teams that played in the Super Bowl. And that, to a large degree, is because Andrew Luck is on that roster.
And look, again, stats, you can spin them any way you want to, but 46 touchdowns, 27 picks isn't bad at all
for
a second-year quarterback. But what is it, 52-19 for Russell Wilson?
52-19.
And when you consider that really for the first half of his rookie year, they didn't let him go. You know, they didn't cut him loose and still probably haven't cut him completely loose because they don't need to. And he still was able to produce that many. I don't think you look at their wide receiver group up there, tight ends included.
Yeah.
And say, wow, you know, it's easy to fall into 30 touchdown passes with that football team. So I think he's been more productive than the feeling around him would indicate. The other guys that they have listed in the top 10 here, they had Luck, Robert Quinn, who ended up with, what do you have, around 20 sacks
Where's
last
Peterson?
Year? 19 last year. Luke Kuechly, Muhammad Wilkerson of the Jets is number 4. Patrick Peterson is number 5, who, by the way, they've said now, will not play any offense or special teams anymore. And he's really good at punt returning.
Yes.
I mean, he had 4 touchdowns, I think, 2 seasons ago.
His rookie year, yeah.
Yeah, so, but I guess they feel he's so valuable as a cornerback that they don't want to risk injury there. Tyron Smith, Cowboys tackle, has quietly been a really nice player for them. Don Terry Poe, who we saw in the opener here with Kansas City last year, might have been the defensive MVP of the first half of the season last year. He was so good. Levante David, who is a tackling machine in Tampa Bay's defense, and Alshon Jeffrey at number 9. I did find it interesting, though, just kind of looking through it, that they listed 25 guys, obviously, but they also listed other guys that were under consideration, and not a Jag made that again. By the end of the season, if they make some kind of step forward in terms of the victory total, you think that'll come?
It's interesting. Don Terry Poe, you mentioned, all the pre-draft talk was how talented he was. Could he keep doing it at this level?
You know, would he be a bust? Because was he a combine wonder?
It just shows you everybody who, you know, you just don't know with these guys because that was always the word on him, right? And then on paper, he would have been a guy you stayed away from for that very reason. And sure enough, he's fine in the NFL and very, very good. So you just don't know at that level.
I wonder about it because, like, a guy under consideration on this list here, Jarvis Jones. I think coming out of college around here, we're like, wow, guy dominated in the toughest conference, led the SEC in sacks his last
few
years.
In the league.
Didn't show a peep of anything last year. Barely cracked the lineup. Barely got any reps with the Steelers.
At least Cyprian played list maker.
That's right. That's kind of where I'm going that, you know, I think there's probably just some overlooking of Jacksonville in general and still giving credit to guys who were recent high draft picks.
It would be hard to watch Jonathan at the end of last year and not think that he has a chance to be a very, very good player, certainly one of the best 48 young guys in the league. But again, it's I don't ever worry too much about whether Jaguars players are on lists or off. If this team gets to the point where they're clearly going to be a 500 or better team, these lists will happen on their own.
John, welcome to Sports Radio.
I understand.
Where we love a good list. By the way, Sip needs to keep his eye on the ball during practice. Did you see he was on the sideline? He got nailed by, was it a screen pass somebody threw that missed a target?
I almost did too, but it was a little kid throwing the ball on the sideline.
I don't know who the media member was last night. I didn't recognize the guy. Mm. Now, we've seen some good plays on the ball this year, highlighted by Brent Martineau's left-handed, one-handed grab.
Yep.
Right? Very Mercedes Lewis-esque.
It was.
Oh, my goodness. One pass is coming. It was going to bounce 4 or 5 feet. Did you see this one, Fortunato? 4 or 5 feet in front of the guy. I don't know who he was. And he throws his hands up like he's having a hissy fit, blocked the ball. His sunglasses flew one way. I don't know what else he was carrying, flew the other way. It was just like, boom, it exploded in his face, and he had no shot, no intention, no inclination.
Was it Fat Tony who almost got helmeted the other day?
Yeah, I knocked down the helmet the other day during the scrum.
Oh, yeah, you had the helmet basically thrown at you.
Yeah, Clay Harbor's helmet.
Which was nice.
I've touched Clay Harbor's helmet. Do you want to touch me?
Well, yeah, that was you and Tyson Alualu are in an exclusive club there as far as that goes. All right, 641-1010. If you want to get in today and weigh in on this a little bit later, you're welcome to. Coming up, one of the Jaguar players under the age of 25, what we think will be a cornerstone of the franchise. Luke Jokel, second overall pick last year. Tony and I had a chance to catch up with him right after the show yesterday. You'll hear that conversation coming up next. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Last year, the Jags spent the second overall pick in the NFL draft on a tackle out of Texas A&M, Luke Jokel, and he joins us here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. Luke, this year, I would imagine coming in like any guy going into his second year, you're a lot more acclimated, know what to expect. How has this offseason been different so far than your rookie offseason?
First off, it went by a lot faster. You know, that first offseason, you know, was long, and, you know, finishing off your senior year or my last year at A&M and get going right into combine training and all that kind of stuff, it was a long process. But this year, you know, just focusing only on football was definitely a nice thing. And, you know, for me, focusing on rehab and all that kind of stuff too. But, you know, I'm excited to be kicking off the season. I think the whole building is excited. We're excited for a great year.
Is it easier for you going into that second season too? I mean, you talk about all that you have to do, getting ready, not only coming out of college, but going into the combine and talking to coaches and then the draft, and then you're right into that rookie minicamp, everything that goes on. Is it easier for you just to be able to clear your mind and completely focus on football, what you have to do on the field?
Yeah, it's way easier. That first year is a long year overall. But, you know, going into my second year, I'm definitely going in with a lot more confidence. You know, I feel good. I feel, you know, totally healthy, and, you know, I'm excited just to play football and, you know, get out there on the field and play again. It's gonna be a great year.
Word was you and Mike Brewster spent a lot of time together because you're both rehabbing and kind of bonded a little bit, you know, worked on your bodies, got yourself in good shape. You feel like you're, you know, having that extra time, you're stronger than you've ever been. I mean, how has that maybe taking that step back maybe helped your preparation?
It's helped a ton. It's nice when you're not having, being an offensive lineman and not having to train for a 40-yard dash. You know, that's something I'll never do in a football game. And, you know, it's nice to just go out there and focus on, you know, offensive line stuff. And having Mike around all offseason with me, and, you know, that was a huge help, too. Especially him being a center, going in and watching film and, you know, talking with him about that kind of stuff, too, is just, you know, made it a huge help, too. And, you know, it was a good offseason for our entire offensive line, and we're ready to kick things off.
I know we had the opportunity to sit down and talk to Zane Beatles last week, and he comes in from that Denver offense. He's been in front of Peyton Manning for the last couple seasons. How much of a help has he been for you?
He's been huge. He's one of the oldest guys in the offensive line group, and, you know, he's still young. He's still a great player, and, you know, he's been a huge, huge, big-time leader for our offensive line so far, and, you know, he's a smart player. He's always talking out in the field. You know, he's made me a better player just by playing next to him, and, you know, it makes my job a lot easier. And, you know, he's been great for offensive line room, and, you know, I think we're all excited to have him.
We understood the circumstances last year as we talk here with Luke Jokel on Jaguars Today. You came in, they had Eugene Monroe. They're going to play on the right side until, obviously, they ended up trading Eugene in the middle of the season to Baltimore. As soon as you get a chance to move over to the left, you get hurt. I mean, just was it frustrating for you? Did you feel kind of, you know, like you were swimming a little bit, or were you comfortable enough playing either side of the offensive line that it didn't matter that much?
You know, I felt way more comfortable at the left side. Playing the right, you know, I hadn't played that since maybe my sophomore year of high school, something like that. So, you know, definitely the comfort level was way more on the left side. But, you know, I was excited just to step in and, you know, just try to help my team out and help them win. And when I got to move to left, you know, I was excited just to be back over in my position, be the best I could possibly be. And then, you know, that injury just kind of ruined everything. And, you know, kind of letting you kind of feel like you let the team down when they make the switch, you can move over to left, and then you get hurt 15 plays in. So that was definitely a rough year.
How different are those two spots in preparing to play them and actually playing them? Because I think for a layman like Tony and me, we look at it and we say you're probably moving backwards a lot more on the left side. You're dealing generally with the team's premier pass rusher, although you got plenty of guys like J.J. Watt that line up across from a right tackle too, and that your right tackles are more your road graders. Is that an oversimplification?
You know, it probably 5 years ago it was more like that, but now in the NFL there's so many good pass rushers out there. Both tackles need to know how to pass block, and both tackles need to know how to run block. And you know, that's the way the league has turned. And you know, you need great pass protectors on both sides. And you know, it's just kind of your comfort level. It's just flipping your feet around. Everything's just totally flipped around. Everything's opposite. And, you know, when you've been doing something on the left side for 7 years in a row, and, you know, when I was at left, I really never practiced in a right-handed stance or setting right-handed or anything like that. And, you know, if you've just been doing that, like, it's like brushing your teeth with your right hand your whole life, then you're like, I'm going to start brushing with my left. It's just kind of awkward for a while. So, you know, it was kind of like that to start off with.
I'm going to try that tonight, by the way.
You guys put on the pads for the first time on Sunday, at least the shoulder pads, and it felt like the intensity level, especially during the 9-on-7s, the 11-on-11s, immediately ratcheted up. As you as a player, do y'all feel that too, just that intensity level? As soon as those pads come on, it rises up to another level?
Yeah, for sure. I think every offensive lineman, defensive lineman know that, you know, when we're not wearing pads, it's not real football. You know, we're trying to work on our technique. We're trying to work on our craft when we're wearing helmets. And, you know, for an offensive lineman, it's great to work on your feet and for your hands and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, football, what we play on Sundays, we're fully padded. We're hitting. So, you know, when we got in pads for the first time out there yesterday, you know, things definitely changed. And I think every guy was excited to put on the pads because, you know, when you're in helmets dancing around, it's a little bit different than when you're in full pads and hitting.
Luke Jokel here with us on Jaguars Today. I have a hard enough time, Luke, judging offensive line play when it is in full pads, because I'm like a lot of people. I'm going to watch the ball, you know what I mean? And even when I focus in, I don't always know what to look for. Give us an idea as we move forward and full pad hitting practices really kick off in the middle of this week. What is something that I or a typical Jaguar fan who's out there watching one of these practices can look for to know if the offensive line is doing well?
You know, the biggest thing in the run game is, you know, the offensive line has to get movement. They have to create space for that running back. And, you know, in the NFL, you don't necessarily, you know, blow your guy off the football and, you know, finish him every single time and stuff like that. You know, in high school and college, you can do that a little bit more. But, you know, everyone's great in the NFL, but it's definitely just getting movement and creating space for your running back. In the pass game, the biggest thing is just protecting that quarterback. You don't ever want him to even touch. So, you know, that's our job every pass is not to get Chad or Blake touched, and you know, that's the biggest thing. And you know, there's a ton of technique involved in both of those things, and you know, we spend all day talking about all that kind of stuff. But you know, the biggest thing is create space for the ball carrier, and you know, don't let the ball carrier get touched.
I think in terms of a Toby Gerhardt style of runner, it's got to be fun to block for that kind of guy, because he's not going to dance a whole lot. I'm not saying he can't make a move on anybody, but he's going to get whatever's there and a little bit more, because he's going to lower his shoulder on every play.
Yeah, I mean, that's offensive linemen love that type of runner, you know, that brings the brings the physicality to the defense. You know, we try to do that in the run game also. Pass protection is just such a, you know, we're backpedaling or, you know, we're kicking back and stuff like that. You know, we're a little bit more passive. But in the run game, we're able to come off the ball, you know, hit them in the mouth. And, you know, when we got a running back that's doing the exact same thing, you know, trying to punish them also, it's, you know, it's fun to watch.
You were around Chad Henne last year, obviously, but he comes in as the starting quarterback this year. What have your impressions early on in this season been of Chad Henne and Blake Bortles?
You know, they've both been great so far this camp. You know, they're both run the field when they're on it, and you know, that's most important for a quarterback. You know, they take lead, and you know, they get everyone right. And you know, right now we're not perfect by any means, but we're getting better every single day. And you know, they're running protections. You know, they're running the offense right, and I think they've both been great so far.
Fans are excited. I think you can probably sense that. The organization seems like there's a lot of energy to it. The stadium's going to be spectacular, all that. But as far as the team, the talent on the field, you saw what you had last year. You went through that. Comparing that to where you're at this year, how much further ahead do you think this year's team is going to be to start the season?
I think we're way further. You know, just by practicing against these guys, you know, last year, I mean, I was, you know, I've got a lot better since last year coming in, you know, into my rookie year. But, you know, going against these guys every single day, going against those defensive linemen and all that kind of stuff, I feel like they've improved every single day, too. And, you know, we got some great pass rushers with Clemens on the outside. And, you know, Red Bryant's definitely a challenge in the
middle.
He's
a big boy, man.
He's a tough guy in that run game and pass game. So, you know, we're definitely a more talented team for sure.
Do you like the pressure that is put on you as not only the number two overall pick, but you're the left tackle, so you're protecting the future franchise in Blake Bortles at some point? Do you enjoy that kind of pressure being on your shoulders?
Yeah, I think every guy, you know, in this locker room enjoys that pressure. You know, we every guy's probably dream is to play in the NFL, and you know, we all want to be the best we can be and all want to compete every single day. That's why these guys are in the locker room. And I love, you know, having the pressure, and, you know, it's all, you know, me protecting Blake's backside. But, you know, it's five guys working together, you know, me and the four other offensive linemen working together to do that job. And that's another reason why I love offensive line, because every single guy has to be on the same page working together. It's just not me out there. And, you know, that's definitely the most tight and team-oriented group on every team, because, you know, we all have to gel and all have to be on the same page.
You don't get to be the number two pick in the draft as an offensive lineman without being tough and having some nasty to you. I'm struck, though. This is the first time I've sat down with you. I'm struck by how calm he is, Tony.
Yeah.
You're just like a very even-keeled guy. Do you feel like you're a guy, like, when the ball's kicked off, does that flip just switch for you or what?
Yeah, it really just does. You know, I'm just kind of a softer-spoken, kind of quieter guy. You know, I wouldn't say I'm shy or anything, but just, you know, I don't really talk a lot.
Let your game do the talking for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I just go out there and play football. I love the game. You know, I grew up playing the sport. You know, it's, my dad instilled that with me at a young age, and he taught me at a young age is, you know, you can be the nicest guy you want to be off the field, but when you're on it, you got to go out there and, you know, punish people and kill people and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've lived by that my whole life, and I love what I do, and it's great to just go out there and be physical.
What are they feeding you in College Station, man? You guys are pumping out top five tackles now on a regular basis.
Yeah, you know, that was all my recruiting class out of high school. So, you know, all of us came in together, and, you know, that was Mike Sherman was the head coach then, and he kind of brought in, he's a big offensive line guy, and that offense he ran was, you know, offensive line friendly and all that kind of stuff. So I think all of us just had that mindset. We all wanted to be NFL linemen, and we figured that would be a great school to go through, and you know, it ended up working out for a lot of us.
It's paid off so far, and more in the pipeline as well. Luke Jokel, Tony, last thought?
Yeah, I know we'll hear from running backs and wide receivers, defensive ends, and they'll have their goals for the season. They want to get 10 sacks or 1,500 yards. For you, do you set personal goals going into a season, and what do they look like if you do?
Yeah, it's a little bit harder to, you know, set stats and all that kind of stat goals for offensive linemen, because it's just, you know, there's really not many of those for offensive linemen. So, you know, we're a little bit more about what our running backs do, you know, giving up less sacks, all that kind of stuff. You know, personally, you know, I've you know, I personally set goals and all that kind of stuff. But my mindset right now going into camp is just try to get better every single day. I know every single day I'm leaving practice, watching film, and, you know, I know going in the next day I need to work on these few bullet points, and that's all I'm focusing on right now.
Hey, we appreciate the time, man. And, you know, and talking to guys who know what they're talking about when it comes to this, like Tony Boselli, he says he looks at you, and it's evident by the way you move, the way, you know, the way you're built, that the potential is there to be a really, really good offensive tackle in this league. So I guess I would say to you, you know, hopefully you can play all 16 games. I'm sure that's a goal of yours as well. And just if guys like Tony are right, and I take his word a lot more than I would take mine, just if you live up to your potential, the Jags are going to be very happy with you for a long, long time. Thanks for taking some time out, man.
Thank you very much.
All right, there you go, Luke Jokel. Tony, I had a chance to catch up with him yesterday. We'll see him back on the practice field tomorrow as the Jags continue training camp. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, Jaguars Today broadcasting live from Jaguar practice. Mike Dempsey, John Osher, Fat Tony. Later on in the program, about 40 minutes away, Jed Fish, Jaguar offensive coordinator, is going to stop by. Hey, folks, you got a chance to win tickets to the home opener, Jags versus the Colts. Here's how. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today, and look for the post. We pinned it at the top that asks you to post or tweet your favorite photo from last Saturday's mega event at Everbank Field with the unveiling of the scoreboards and everything. We've already gotten some good ones up there. It's presented by Foundation Professionals of Florida, who know that you as the fans are the foundation of the Jaguar organization. They also know that your home is your most critical investment, and without a good foundation, everything else is in jeopardy. You got to know the symptoms. Exterior and interior wall cracks, windows and doors sticking, foundation cracks, sloping floors, those all could be signs of much more significant problems down the road. Call Foundation Professionals of Florida. They're licensed and insured, 287-2690, or visit foundationprosfl.com. That's foundationprosfl.com. Back with this date in football history and a happy birthday wish to a current Jacksonville Jaguar on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Good morning with your 1010XL on 92.5 FM, Heakin Orthopedic Local Sports Update. I'm Andrew Gibson. This update is brought to you by Osteen Volkswagen. The NCAA has announced that it will create a $70 million fund to test current and former college athletes for brain injuries. The settlement applies to multiple contact sports, including football, basketball, wrestling, and others. The NCAA will also pledge $5 million for concussion research. Join the Jacksonville Chamber's Downtown Council for the annual Painting the Paw Prints on Bay Street coming up on Saturday from the Main Street Bridge to Everbank Field. In support of the Jaguars' 2014 season, Jacksonville has left 263 paw prints all the way to the stadium for the Downtown Council to paint. And the After 40 is coming up as well. All goes on 8 to 11 coming up on Saturday morning. Also on Saturday, a big event going on at Everbank Field. The Jaguars will scrimmage. Gates open at 5 o'clock. The practice will run from 6:45 until 8:15. We will broadcast part of the scrimmage beginning at 6:30 as Frank Frangie, Jeff Longham, and Tony Boselli will all be there to break it down. Rick Ballew also on the sidelines. All that going on once again with gates opening at 5 o'clock at Everbank Field for the scrimmage going on 6:45 until 8:15. More of Jaguars Today with Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and John Ocher coming up next.
Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
Is that Marcus Pollard bringing you flowers or balloons or something?
Yet again.
What's he doing?
Yet again.
Were those for Cyprian? This date in football history. Jonathan
like
Cyprian
yes.
was born. Was that a yes?
That sounded like a yes from the hallway.
Okay. So maybe Marcus is just delivering those, or do you think he gets a balloon bouquet for everybody in the building on their special day? Fortunato, have you had one from a Marcus Pollard balloon bouquet yet?
Not from Marcus, but man, that would be something, wouldn't it?
It'd be pretty nice.
I didn't get one.
Imagine that, Tony, when you were playing fantasy football, I don't know, like 10 years ago, you probably had Marcus Pollard on some team. And, you know, you're thinking one day, you know, like a decade from now, maybe he'll bring me a balloon bouquet. What are they? I mean, out of all the weird things that might happen, and probably never would, that's one of them.
Yeah, that's pretty high on the list.
This date in football history presented by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Jonathan Cyprian turns 24 today. Happy birthday to Sip. A couple of other things that happened on this date in 1986. A New York jury ruled that NFL teams or the league violated antitrust laws and awarded the United States Football League a stunning court victory. You remember what the
$3,
verdict
right?
was?
Was it $3?
It was $1, right. And then it was triple damages.
Right.
So $3. And I believe that check was written and never cashed. I think somebody, I've seen it, I believe, a $3 check that the NFL wrote.
I think that's the story. I remember walking... I was walking into the University of Florida library and seeing that story, and all I could think about was, I wonder who the Redskins are going to get off. I mean,
of course!
That was how you thought back then.
Did you have a USFL team that you followed, that you made your own?
Not real. I mean, you kind of pulled for the Bulls. I mean,
yeah.
I wasn't around Jackson Hole. I was at college, so you're in Jacksonville, you know, 2 or 3 months a year in the summer. But I remember being at school and, you know, seeing Gary Clark's name in the paper with
sure.
the Bulls and that sort of thing. So that's about what I remember from the
NFL. I remember following
into it,
the Chicago Blitz. They had a guy, Tremaine Johnson, mm-hmm. I think was his name, back in the day. They had some good players, obviously.
I do remember going to a Bulls game out here when Flutie and Herschel Walker were on the Generals.
Yeah.
It was a big deal when the Bulls beat them that day, I think. So that was my one USFL game that I actually went to.
Owned by a younger yep. Donald Trump, yep. anyway, back in the day. But
it was cool. I mean, it was a lot of people. Good. I mean, you know, it was.
It was fun.
Well attended.
USFL was pretty good football, mm-hmm. you know, and they got greedy, wanting to go head to head with the NFL. Had they played their cards right, they probably eventually could have had a couple of those teams absorbed into the NFL, much mm-hmm. like, you know, the AFL merge, because the NFL would go on to expand in the decade of the 90s, and they would have been in position
right.
to absorb some franchises. We're kind of burying the lead.
Maybe even the Bulls.
Maybe even the Bulls, right? And then we would have been, we would have had two teams in Jacksonville.
That's
wouldn't
right.
that have been amazing? 1995, what happened on this date in 1995? Football history.
I'm drawing a blank. I don't know.
How about the Hall of Fame game Jacksonville and Carolina?
Yeah, I can remember the Hall of Fame game. It's the first preseason game, obviously. And the newspaper was part of it. Us covering it like it was a real game. I mean, like the score, asking Coughlin about, you know, what should you have done?
Strategy in the fourth quarter, right.
And yeah. it's, you know, everybody was into it. We were all new covering the NFL. We sort of knew it didn't matter, but yet it was the first game, the first event. It was Carolina.
Greatly. Yeah.
And looking back now, covering the Hall of Fame game, the coverage might be a little different today, Mike.
Oh, I would imagine it would be a little bit different today, but we're a jaded veteran NFL township now. So
right. We've seen some stuff.
Touchdowns for the Jags in that game were scored by whom?
I ought to know this, and I just...
Hacker is screaming at you right now. I guarantee you Hacker is on the ball. Tony, what do you got?
I don't know.
You had Desmond Howard, 66-yard punt return.
That's
put him
right.
on the board!
That's right.
Put him on the board. First touchdown in Jaguar history. And James Stewart with a third-quarter one-yard run. Mark Brunell, your leading rusher for the Jacksonville Jaguars. 4 carries for 35 yards.
That wasn't uncommon that year.
No, not a promising start for little man Stewart. 12 for 16,
yeah.
grinding out that 1.3 or whatever Eesh. Average. Not too good. He would go on to have, obviously, much better days. Steve Berline was your leading
Stevie.
Passer. Yep, 6 of 9 with a pick for 108 yards. Brunell, 8 of 18. With a pick for 88 yards. And here are some of the names of guys that caught balls for the Jaguars that day. Laro.
Remember? Gordon Laro.
Okay, Gordon yep. Laro. Davenport.
Shea? I can't remember the first name.
I'm asking you ones that I don't know,
yeah.
so don't even look at
Najee,
me.
Najee, maybe.
Let's see. Najee Davenport? I don't think it was. Najee Davenport wasn't in the league. He was still pooping in
that's right.
in
you know,
hampers
he was
at that
leaving
point in time.
Gifts.
Yes.
He was pulling Davenport. Yeah, I can't remember that one.
Let's see. You had Stewart. You had, of course, Givens. You had, would that be Jimmy? It was 1 for 48.
Yeah, Jimmy would have played that day.
Yeah. So you had a hodgepodge of guys. You can go. It's very easy to find. Just,
Gordon Laro. I remember Gordon well.
Throw 1995 Hall of Fame game into Google if you want to go down memory lane and see how that all worked out. Jaguars' all-time record versus the Carolina Panthers when they counted. What do you got?
All-time record.
All-time record. according to this site, which looks like some dude's blog.
I'm going to guess 3-4.
3-2
okay.
All time. Panthers beat them the first time in 96. Jags got them in 99, in 2003, and again in 2011 with a one big loss coming. I think I've got that right. Anyway.
I do remember the 96 game was a big deal when they beat them here. That was a big...
Oh, no question. That was the rival.
Big game for,
I mean,
yeah.
obviously Pittsburgh was a rival right from the outset.
It was one of the first games where they really showed that year. It took them about another month and a half to really get going. But Carolina wasn't bad. And that day the Jaguars really handled them out here. And I remember Tom Coughlin coming into the media room. It was one of the times where you really knew what the game mattered to him. I mean, he came in and they controlled it. And it was one of those days that you remember looking back where Tom was really, really on point and really fired up, and you knew it meant something to him.
I think I've got that. They won in 96, the Jags. They won in 96, 99, and 07. They lost to the Panthers in 03 and 11. Panthers, obviously, in 96, they as well would go on to their respective championship game.
Right. Well, and that was sort of a storyline. The Panthers had gotten off to a better start in 95. And then they were pretty good in 96. I think they were 12-4, 11-5 in that round. I mean, they were good. And, for the first 10, 11, even up to, what was the record start? 4-7 for the Jags.
Right.
There was a lot of comparisons. Our editors of the newspaper were wanting to write why the Jaguars weren't up to snuff with Carolina, all this. So, from a franchise perspective, that's one of the reasons that the run late that season was such a big deal, because it sort of ended those questions about who was ahead, who was doing a better job. And the Jaguars eventually went along during that period to be better over the long term than Carolina was early on.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that that game against Carolina came in September of 96, and the Jags, that was one of their early season wins.
Right, beat Pittsburgh and Carolina earlier that year, which are two good teams.
Yeah.
And then just stumbled a lot against, you know, some teams that, in retrospect, they should have beaten, but they were just trying to find their footing. And
that,
you know,
offense got crazy hot.
But at first it was crazy mistakes. Brunell struggled in a couple of games. I mean, there were games that were as weird a games as I've ever covered in the league against the Saints and the Rams that year. They dominated on the road, New Orleans, St. Louis, and I couldn't pull out victories. So you knew they were okay, but you didn't see what was coming.
I want to say, I mean, we're now in the era where Drew Brees has had, what, two or three 5,000-yard seasons. Mm-hmm. Matt Stafford has cracked that mark once or twice. The new standard is probably more like 4,500 yards. Brunell threw for 4,300 yards
right.
in 96. I don't think any other Jag quarterback has cracked 4,000 yards in a single season.
No, that's
certainly out there. And again, you're in an era now where, you know, you throw for less than 4,000 yards, unless maybe you're a Russell Wilson in a controlled environment where you're making big plays, and generally they're looking to upgrade from you. So that's been part of the story, you know, and part of the story is, you know, quarterbacks that even when they were having their good years never stayed 100% healthy in this time here in Jacksonville. So that was 1995 in the Wayback Machine on this date in football history. Jags and the Panthers squaring off in the Hall of Fame game, the first on-field tilt for both of those clubs. 20-14, the final. Carolina wins. This date in football history brought to you by the best fence company of Jacksonville. Their mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality fencing product at a competitive price while still providing unsurpassed customer service. You want to invest in your home or your business, do it with the best fence company of Jacksonville. Don't settle for anything but the best. They'll give you a professional free estimate at your convenience. So call them today at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. Coming back, we'll look at some of the replies that we've already gotten. The Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day asks you this: who will be the Jags' best player under the age of 25 this season? Throw out some of the candidates earlier. We'll see who you think fits in that category. Also, we're going through some of those Hall of Fame game stats. Tony has, courtesy of Ryan O'Halloran, some of the stats from training camp, the passing numbers.
Yeah.
We'll take a look at Jaguar quarterback performance over the last 4 days as well. Then bottom of the hour, Jed Fish, Jaguar offensive coordinator, scheduled to stop by and chat with us and give us his impressions on the early days of training camp as well. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. We're live at Everbank Field. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars today rolling on here. Jed Fish, a Jaguar offensive coordinator, scheduled to join us in about 15 minutes or so. So stick around for that. Mike Dempsey, the Ozone's here. Johnny O and Fat Tony as well. Today's Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day, guys, asked which player will be the Jags' best under the age of 25 this season. Johnny O, who would you nominate?
Well, I'm not sure if you're watching, though, Mike. It's chaos out there at this photo shoot, by the way.
Oh, really? Do we have...
Yeah, Jay Blaze out there.
What do we have?
You know, football underarm, stiff-arming people.
Where can I get this?
It's on your 1010XL Twitter feed.
Is it?
Which I would have thought you'd have been on.
Well, I'm not on the 1010XL feed all the time. I'm on my own feed.
And you got Blaylock very much. Stiff arm, Jaguars t-shirt.
I mean, the Heisman pose, yeah.
Helmets and Heels debuts next Tuesday at 7 p.m.
I'm officially jealous.
Well, I'm jealous, too, because I've clicked on this link, and the computer's still working on opening up this photo.
It'll do that.
I'm a little jealous of your...
Layla's popping a hip on one of these.
Your laptop.
So, but the
there's
player,
some heels.
Yeah.
Heels with some jeans going on right there. I saw the heels that Lauren's going to wear. Those are not they. Those are not Lauren's dogs right there.
No.
Those are not her feet. In that picture. But that's really the big news, and we're burying the lead today.
Well, the question,
Heels, the photo shoot.
Absolutely. I mean, Fat Tony is no longer in the studio. He's out there.
And it's also an honor. Lauren just turned 24 last Friday.
So she could be
She's eligible for this list. If someone has tweeted Lauren as a suggestion, they may win a t-shirt today.
It could win. So the question was?
Outside of Lauren Brooks.
Right.
Who will be the best Jaguar under the age of 25 this season? Who will be 25 or 24 or less when the season kicks off?
I'm going to say Jokel, because I think everybody else will say Ciprin. But I think Jokel is going to turn into a rock-solid guy over there, and I think that's really going to matter this year. So
okay.
I would say Jokel.
Tony, who would you say?
Are we going with the same criteria as the list where it can't be a rookie?
Yeah, but if you think it's going to be rookie, who do you think it's going to be? We didn't put that as a criteria, so
no. I just, with what we're seeing at the wide receiver position, Cecil Shorts, look, I love the guy, and I think he's a really good player, but at some point he's going to get hurt. That's just the history that we've had with him. And with what we've seen, I think that Allen Robinson's going to be a big, big player for this team this year. And they're going to have to rely on him a lot more than they wanted to. Even coming into the season. I mean, if A. Sanders caught 51 passes last year, if Cecil's going to go down, I mean, those balls got to go somewhere. And I would think that Allen Robinson's the more likely target between he and Marquise Lee right now.
I would agree. I think I have more expectation for Allen Robinson, but that's just based on such a small sample size, too.
Sure.
I mean, they both missed so much time in OTAs. It's just that it seems like every practice, Allen Robinson has a play I remember. Not that Marquise Lee is doing anything wrong, and he looked very good last night, I thought. I think the guy, and I would probably say Jokel as well, because the importance of the position would factor in so greatly. I think the guy who's having a great start to camp, who is becoming a demonstrative leader on the field, is Dwayne Grotz. The guy is all over the place, and really, we talked about this yesterday with Ryan O'Halloran. You want your secondary to have an edge, you know, and you want, if there's any swagger on your defense, I mean, look, the Jags had it with Stroud and Henderson for years on the D-line, but you want your corners, you want the guys who are out there on an island to have that cockiness to them. And in all the ways that the Jags emulate Seattle in some degree or not, that seems to be carried over in the embodiment with both Winston Guy and Grotz. But I think they've both been playing well, but Grotz seems to have two or three pass breakups on, you know, well-thrown balls just about every practice right now.
And that's what you want. You need that corner in this defense. And as you were saying that, Mike, I started thinking, Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee, Luke Jokel, Dwayne Grotz, Jonathan Ciprin. That's five or six guys. I'm not going to say all of them are going to turn out as well as we're all talking today on the show, because that's unlikely. But I don't know that this time last year we were all sitting with as much confidence thinking a group of six or seven guys on this team have a chance to be really good players. Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee, you always hesitate just 4 days in with receivers to say it's gonna play out over a long-term period. But there are guys now. There are guys who you can envision being good players for a long time. percentage-wise, you'd think a lot of those guys will be, so that's a really positive thing considering where this team was a year ago.
Tony, what are some of the nominees we received today?
Twitter we got from Joshua Luke Jokel. He'll bounce back from his injury and be a solid anchor on the O-line. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Doug, Jokel, even though he didn't play much last year, he knows what to expect and hopefully will play well into his 30s. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Irish Jaguars, Sip Simple. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Dilla, we got Dwayne Grotz, who eventually becomes the best player on defense. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Tommy Luke Jokel, hashtag fingers crossed. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Gabe, between Sip and Grotz, got to give it to Grotz. Solid rookie campaign and only going to get better. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Eric, I think Sip is going to go off this year. Not a Pro Bowl level, but he'll be noticed. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Christoph, Cyprian, he is a beast who makes people regret going over the middle. Hashtag happy birthday, Sip. And from the Jags, Allen Robinson, he's a natural. Can't wait to watch him catch touchdowns. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag the video boards burnt my retinas.
Yes, they probably will burn many more in the meantime. We love you, including hashtag Jaguars today. We love you creating your own creative hash browns as well. Have you seen the commercial with the guy taking the selfie with the copier? I don't even know what.
I've not.
Oh, it's fantastic. He goes, yeah, I'm getting, you know, he's one of these guys who's out of touch with technology, so he presses his face to the copier, takes a picture, and so his coworker comes in, she's kind of shaking his head. He goes, oh, you can be in the next selfie with me. No need to photobomb. Hash, what does he say? Hash brown selfie. it's one of those, you know, where it's like, that's not how this works.
No.
Kind of commercials. But I enjoyed that. Let me ask you this, guys. Who will be the best player over 30 for the Jags this year? You got Clemens, Red Bryant, Mercedes, and Scobie as the only guys 30 or older this year. I think it's a pretty interesting question. I'm going to vote first this time. I'm going to say Red Bryant.
Yeah, I am too.
Because I just think that what he brings, there's so little variation in what he brings. What he brings, I think, is there every down. It's not dependent on putting up gaudy numbers. He is a large, strong, explosive man that will take multiple offensive linemen to deal with, and that's what you got him to provide you to stuff the run. I think he's going to be there down in, down out, provided he's healthy.
We've talked before, Mike, about liking things that you can count on and knowing it's going to be there. Red Bryant, with his size, with his fortitude, whatever all that is, his stability over there, you would think you can count on that at that spot. Chris Clemens, you know, a pass rusher, there are so many variations. Are you going to get in pass rushing situations? Are you going to be ahead late in games to give him a chance to get numbers? That you don't know, but you know you're going to have a chance to play defense against the run early, and you know that Red Bryant can bring that. I think there's a lot of confidence that he's going to be a stable presence, although I'd be shocked if Scobie has a bad year at the same time. I mean, I think he's proven he's reliable. I just think you're talking position players in this conversation. I would say Red Bryant.
A shockingly young team, though. I mean, really. Clemens and Scobie are 32. Red Bryant's only 30, and so is Mercedes. So, you know, and that's, I mean, Chad, I'm looking at Chad Henney's 29, right. Puzluzzi's 29. These are guys who have been around for a lot of years, and they're still in their 20s.
There are striking stats in that area. Zane Beatles, 64 starts. He's been very durable with Denver. That's more than the entire offensive line combined around him. Chad Henney, seventh year. Only Mercedes Lewis on the offense has more. So Cecil Shorts, fourth year, the most veteran guy in the receiver room who has legitimate experience. This is strikingly young. We've all talked about these guys so much that we feel like Chad Henney and Cecil Shorts have been around forever.
Right.
These are guys who have been with the organization. Chad's going into his third year. Cecil's going into his fourth, I believe. So that's, we feel like they're veterans because we've been talking about them forever. But they're not old guys by NFL standards. Receiver, offensive line, as inexperienced as they are and as little as they've played together, that's why, as much talent as we're talking about, we're still going to be looking at a learning curve for those two positions.
Again, going back to Jokel being 22 years old, I mean, he's got two more full seasons to play, and then he'll be as old as Dwayne Grotz is right now.
Right, and that's, I mean, that's a thing to remember. He's 22, so he's still going to get bigger, thicker.
That man strength.
Yeah, and that's a real thing. I mean, It's stuff you don't develop until you're
10-year-old. I've shown him what the man strength is all about.
I will man up on a 10-year-old.
I can still I'm still stronger with my left arm than my 10-year-old was right. Not for long.
So, but those are real things, especially for an offensive line. You know, there is still development and still growing for a lot of these guys that we're talking about very optimistically.
The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships asks fans always what drives you, and they present the fan feedback spotlight. And the family of dealerships includes Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, and Tom Bush Mini. We invite you to visit TomBush.com for more information the next time you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle. And, of course, you can follow them on Twitter, simply at Tom Bush Motors. Tony, you had some numbers from Ryan O'Halloran that we compiled. Not to say the Ozone doesn't have his own fine set of numbers and statistics, I'm sure, as well. But these are passing efficiency numbers for all the quarterbacks or just Henny and Bortles?
All four quarterbacks in the 11-on-11 drills through the first 4 days of training camp. How many touchdowns do you think the four of them have combined to throw? You guys have been out there.
Four days. I've been at all those practices in 11. I'm going to say, 11-on-11 doesn't give way to just a ton of. I'm going to say six.
Mr. Osier?
Two?
One.
Damn.
They got one touchdown in 11-on-11, so they have five picks. So the one touchdown to five picks, the one touchdown coming from Blake
Bortles.
You're
depressing me.
Look, well, they often run the 11-on-11s, too, from the opposite side of the field. I mean, you're not putting them in goal line situations a whole lot.
Yeah, that stat isn't as scary as it sounds.
No.
I haven't seen that. That sort of implies a very poor level of play out of the quarterbacks. I haven't seen what I would call a poor level of play over all the first 4 days. I wouldn't say it's outstanding, but I wouldn't say it's Pro Bowl. But you've been out there, Mike. I don't see it being 1-6.
Where did Marquise Lee's touchdown the other day, the one up the left sideline?
That was from Bortles, right?
Was that 11-on-11? Or was that? See, I think that's part of my problem. I lose track of what on what is taking place as the writers are jotting down notes.
Sure.
Watching the ball spin through the air. What else?
But when you look at the numbers for Chad Henne, overall through the first 4 days, he's 25 of 37 on 62 snaps with one pick. That one coming last night on the first play of 11-on-11s, I've heard, a ball deflected by Chris Clemens, intercepted by
Roy Miller
there on the defensive line. Blake Bortles, comparing that to the 25 of 37, is 20 of 31. To this point, with one touchdown and one interception in the 11-on-11 drills, he had the best day of any of the quarterbacks for one single day on Saturday when he wound up going 7 of 7.
I thought he was noticeably better than I'd seen him on that day.
7 of 7, and that was the lone touchdown for these guys too. And Ricky Stanzi is 16 of 25 with two picks, including that terrible one on Sunday to Geno Hayes on that slant. That would have been a pick six. And Stephen Morris, 11 of 22 with a pick as well. But really, what they're telling you is that these guys, Henne and Bortles, are playing basically even from a number perspective to this point in camp, which, you know, is about what we expected, I think.
All right. There you have it. A little look inside the numbers, what's going on with the
snap numbers are about even between those two guys, too.
I think Bortles has been a little better than I expected, to be honest with you.
In training camp.
Yeah.
I think it's
been a little ahead of where I thought he'd be.
Yeah. He's played better than he did in OTAs, I think. Not that he was shockingly bad in OTAs.
Right.
The ball looks a little tighter. He's still got some wobblers that he throws out there, but I think that's improved to some degree. The one to Clay Harbor, right? Or was it Clay Harbor diving one? Or no, it wasn't Harbor.
Was it the one to Copeland in the corner of the end zone?
Was it Copeland? That's who it was. That's right. It was. We were talking about this yesterday. Kerry Taylor caught the long pass, which I thought was his best throw of training camp. Then he threw a short one to Clay Harbor over the middle, and he threw the fade, the little pump and go to the corner of the end zone, and that was it. Wow, how about that?
You know the best part of this? For all we think, we can ask Jed Fish coming up next. That's a teaser, isn't
it? That's a fantastic tease. As a matter of fact, we're going to break right now and hopefully be back on the other side with Jaguar offensive coordinator Jed Fish. This Osier guy is getting
professional
his radio
show business.
Thing.
Here we go.
He's Mr. Show Business now, ladies and gentlemen. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony. We're live at Everbank Field in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
The station that takes you inside the huddle.
Jackson 3, 1, 2, 3, 10.
1010XL, Jacksonville Sports Superstation, and 92.5 FM.
All right, coming down the home stretch, Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony, Jaguars today, hoping to catch up with Jed Fish. Jed Fish is not in.
We'll just offer up our own opinions right on now. The offense, Mike. How about that?
Tony's going to play the role of Jed Fish right now, and by doing so, he just stood up and
left
the room. So I think that's an appropriate representation of Jed Fish last night. He seemed to be happy with the proceedings. How do you think you feel? How do you overall? Is this about where you expected the offense to be at this point, or is it too soon to even really know where it is?
Well, it's tough because we haven't seen the offensive line really go at it in a game. So it's tough to know where those guys are. I think he's got to be happy. The big underlying storyline is the development of Blake Bortles, because eventually he's going to be your guy, and eventually everything's going to sort of revolve around him. So my guess is he's got to be very happy with what he's seen in terms of Blake Bortles, quote, getting it, in terms of his approach, in terms of the improvement. I think Blake still has work to do in the fundamental area. In the fundamental area, we've all talked about the footwork and the throwing from his legs and all that stuff. We talked about that ad nauseum during camp. He clearly has still has work to do on that front. But in terms of seeing the field, in terms of having confidence, poise, there was a play last night where he rolled out and he threw a pass, I guess, to his left, and I think it was to Tandon Doss. It didn't have the zip on it that it will in a year, but it was a good pass, and it showed some poise, it showed some ability to work the ball in. I think you're seeing more of that from Blake than you did in the offseason, and I think that's a good sign for the future. When Jed comes in, my guess is he'll say he's very pleased with the progress he's made.
In terms of the wide receivers that have had a chance to take advantage of the absence of Cecil Shorts, Allen Hurn seems to be getting, you know, some of the earlier behind Lee and Robinson, getting some of the earlier options. Is he the guy to you that has stood out the most, and is it because do you think his comfort level, knowing what Jed Fish did at Miami, that it's been an easy transition?
I think that's part of it, and I think what they saw during the offseason from Allen Hurns was a guy who maybe didn't have anything that you went, wow, meaning speed, meaning just outstanding quickness, meaning all that stuff, but he was the same player every day. He didn't rise and fall a whole lot, and he brought some consistency. Again, coaches like things they can rely on, and Allen Hurns looks like a guy that you know what you're going to get out of him, and you're there on a daily basis. So I would say, yes, he is a guy that after Robinson, after Lee, that is a guy who is showing up as a rookie.
And you figure, I mean, right now Hurns looks like a guy who's going to stick around. What do you think the numbers game is? You figure Tandon Doss, because of assuming he's the lead punt returner, is going to have a spot among those guys. You're obviously going to have Cecil, you're going to have Lee, you're going to have Robinson. With Doss, that's four. Hurns, I'm leaning towards being, what, the fifth guy right now?
Yes, because we're not counting Ace.
Correct.
Right. So, yes, Hurns is the fifth guy, and when Ace gets back, probably carry those six in that range.
What about Mike Brown?
I think he's a guy that, and this is not coming from anybody inside the building, they may think, yes, we like him. Can you count on him being around? If you have to make a roster move, can he be on the street for 2 weeks and not get picked up by somebody else? I don't know. He's certainly got value, and you can certainly rely on him. I think he's going to be a very, very tough decision.
What is his value mostly? Is it just the fact that he knows what he's doing?
Yeah, you can depend on him.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't think he's ever going to be a 1,000-yard guy. He's not going to be a go-to guy. But you also, when you're sitting in a meeting on Thursday, you're not worried about Mike Brown not knowing where to go. And you're not worried that you're going to put him in there and he's just going to be lost. So that has value when you're playing with the bottom of the roster and you're trying to figure out who to keep active, who you can put out there. He's shown you that he can be okay. And there are guys who haven't done that. So that's his value, is that you can rely on what he is.
I had a great catch last night. It was about two paces out of bounds. But
he's that guy who every time you try to write him off, he does something like that. So
right.
That's what, you know, he'll be very tough to keep off the roster.
It's just interesting, I mean, how these guys go about the business of practicing. You know, how, you know, typical for you see running backs try to run balls out to the end zone, mm-hmm. even if the play was going to be over with. Then you see defensive backs, you know, kind of miming, and not so much miming, actually trying to knock the ball out of guys well after the play is over with, kind of instill that mindset to hang on to the football. I think it's the same thing with these receivers. Doesn't matter if the play, if you can't get the feet down, they're trying to show that if the ball, I can't control where the ball was placed, but the ball's in my vicinity, I'm going to come down with it regardless.
Well, I guess it's kind of human nature. They know that at some point, these coaches are going to be sitting around watching film and discussing them later on in camp. And you'd rather have a positive image in the coach's brain than a negative image. And that's probably pretty smart on their part.
As far as the running back position goes, they feel Toby Gerhart is built to be the workhorse mm-hmm. for this football team. They've talked about over 300 touches for him. I've seen a couple of runs. It looked like he could have popped a pretty sizable one. But, again, I think his strength comes when they are in full contact and full pads, and we're going to see more of him. Because right now, I think other guys, quicker guys maybe, are shining a little bit more, breaking some of those longer runs. We talked about it earlier. Jordan Todman seems like he's making a play or two mm-hmm. every practice right
well,
now.
Well, you've talked about exactly that in practice you always see running backs who are 35 yards downfield.
Right.
And you go, but would that have happened if we were in a game?
Right.
Well, Gerhart's the kind of guy who his game is going to be better once they're really on it. And he may not be having 30-yard runs right now. He maybe is having 15-yard runs, but you can envision what he does being a 15-yard run in the game.
Or his 3-yard runs being 6-yard runs because they're stopping at the point of contact with the defender. There's a good chance that defender is going to be moving backwards when he comes into contact with Toby Gerhart.
Right, and I think he's going to be a little better. Everybody's talking about his power and his ability to lower his pads when he's getting hit and getting 2 more yards out of the run. I think he's going to be better at making a safety miss once he's 8 yards deep into the play than people think. I think he's got quicker feet than people think. And, again, I don't know that he's going to go 90, but I think he can go 30 more often than people think.
Storm Johnson, you mentioned potentially practice squad earlier today. I mean, what does he have – what in your opinion, what does he have to do? Is it ball security? Is it blitz pickup? What does he need to show the most to make the 53-man roster?
I think it's a lot of those things. I've always been told there's a lot of guys who can run in this league. There's a lot of guys who aren't in this league who can run. And what that means is there's a ton of guys who can run when the holes are there. It's the other stuff. Can you fit into the offense? Can you pass block? Can you catch? Can you be reliable? Do you know the offense? That's where Storm will have to, during not preseason, he'll have to show that if they decide to keep three, that he belongs in that three. I think they may keep four, in which case he'll be on the roster. I think minimum he's on the practice squad. I think that's okay in his spot. I think that's not an unusual thing for a seventh-round guy to be on the practice squad at the beginning of the season and then be a solid part of the roster by the end. You see that all the time.
Right. You got to worry, though. I mean, obviously you go on the practice squad, other teams can have the potential to sign you. I guess you have the right.
Which may be why they keep four.
Right. And you watch what happened in Carolina yesterday. Tyler Gaffney, who got hurt. I forget what the injury was, but he was going to go on IR. He was a sixth-round pick for the Carolina Panthers. And Bill Belichick, as they were trying to pass him through waivers to place him on injured reserve, claimed him, which I don't have a problem with. I know in the NFL, less so than you get in baseball, it's one of the unwritten rules. You know, people love their unwritten rules that you don't mess with another guy's player that they're just trying to pass through waivers to put on injured reserve.
Right.
He's done it before. The Jags did it. Gene Smith did it with Don Carey. Remember that with with Cleveland? But there are probably only a handful of examples of that happening over the last 5 years or so. But
Bill doesn't care about the examples.
And I wouldn't either. I personally, I mean, look, if you don't want it to happen, make it a rule that you're not allowed to do it.
Right.
He's trying to worry about his football team. I don't think he's too concerned at this point in his tenure with making friends around the league. He is going to, I imagine, coach in New England as long as Tom Brady continues to throw the football in New England. I would think if Belichick is smart, that's probably a good time to get out and do whatever it is that Belichick does.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he hangs it up anytime soon, but that's just me.
Do you? Really?
Yeah, I mean, he's a locker room guy. He loves it. I mean, he's one of those guys, he loves this game, loves being around. He's been around all his life. it'd be hard to imagine him not around it in some capacity.
Well, I think Brady's going to play about another 4 years. What would that make Belichick at that point in time? I don't know how old he is right
Fat
now.
Fat Tony?
Come on,
Fat
Tony.
Let me look it up.
Here you go.
Crack
sure.
research staff.
Speed's the key.
I know everyone is much more concerned with how old Bill Belichick is than what Jed Fish has to say at this point in time. We're hoping, but it's looking like we're probably going to have to catch up with Jed at a later time, probably hopefully after one of these practices this week, and we'll be able to bring that to you.
Four more years would be 66.
He looks darn good in a tux, Fat Tony. That's
he does.
Wikipedia
it's not
entry.
Bad.
Is that
not
a like a cut-off sleeve tux, or is that the full?
It might be. We can't see the sleeves.
The whole blown.
I doubt it.
It might be.
Tux as far as that goes. All right, so rest of the week for the Jags is more of the same, or I guess with the pads going on, tomorrow's the first. How much full contact will we actually see during a full contact practice?
I think we'll see quite a bit because I think they're ready for it. I mean, they've been in shoulder pads, and there's been some hitting out there. Leroy Reynolds had a huge hit last night. Cyprian had a huge hit. So I think it's time to see some running between the tackles and see what these guys can really do up front on offense.
We're going to get some goal line tomorrow, do you expect?
I would expect in the next 2 days that might be a possibility.
We're going to have to rely on the likes of you and Mark Long and Ryan O'Halloran. And Tony and I will be broadcasting from our perch.
We will.
Outside the practice field.
I'll be over there a little bit.
I know. That's what I said. We're going to have to rely on you to report to
that's
us.
That's where the reliability comes
the,
in.
The ongoings of that and your – how do you – by the way, I'm going to have to find out what you've got on your phone that enables you to see it in the sun and tweet as much as you do immediately after you find out a nugget, because I can't see a darn thing.
Yeah, it's that's sort of the bane of my existence.
Maybe an acquired skill. Maybe you writers are just...
You see me a lot like over half under an overhang, you know, pulling a jean
trying to get a little shade.
Trying
to get a little shade on there just to pass along that Cecil's not going to be around for the next couple of weeks. At least...
I have a brutally tough existence, Mike, and that's one of the... That's one of the things that really brings me down.
I know. It's cruel. Well, I almost probably second to mine as we're getting ready to wrap up our workday here at noon and go get some lunch and then, who knows, maybe a nap in, Tony, this afternoon.
Golf.
Who knows what we've got coming up. But tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, Fat Tony and I will be out at practice. So stop by if you're coming out. Good time to come out for the next couple of days as they go to full pads and full contact hitting and all that good stuff. It'll look more like real football than anything you've seen up until this point in time. And along the way, we'll grab the likes of John, Ryan O'Halloran, Mark Long, and whoever else we run into out there, Alfie Crow, Richard Miller, the whole lot of them, Brent Martineau, and we'll get their perspectives on what we see during practice for the next few days. Thanks to Luke Jokel for stopping by today. 22, the most sedate 22-year-old that I've been around in a while. But
yeah, but there's something inside of him. I mean, he's sedate in an interview, but when you talk to him, he gets it. He's ready. It's going to be interesting to watch him this year.
Well, he seems like a smart guy, and honestly, be sedate all you want in this setting. Just go be a controlled nutcase out on the field. You can't be just a raving lunatic, but you want some of that Bocelli anger and edge to you.
I think he's got that. I would not say that he doesn't have that.
We'll look for that ongoing. I will hopefully catch up with Jed Fish a little bit later on this week as well. Again, happy birthday, Jonathan Cyprian, 24 years young today, and as many of you predicted, it will be a near Pro Bowl, if not a Pro Bowl season for Sip this year. We'll find out. Coming up, we've got the boys from XL Primetime. Joe C. was out there last night at Bartram Trail. Hacker and T-Wig as well coming up here on 1010XL for John Osier, for Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks, for Andrew Gibson, and Joe Fortunato. I'm Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today, live at Everbank, as we are every day, right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.